All right. Our next presenter, Seth B. Winner, has been employed by the New York Public Library since 1987. In 1988, he was given the task of preserving the sound portion of the Toscanini legacy, a gift from the family of Arturo Toscanini to the library that was made in 1986. To date, all known rehearsals, concerts, and broadcasts in the legacy have been preserved. The famous NBC radio series from 1963 through 1967, entitled Toscanini, The Man Behind the Legend, was recently been preserved? Ah, I didn't write this. Has recently been preserved. Sorry. I just read them, man. I don't write them. As part of the ongoing process of restoring another section of this unique and valuable legacy. In 1990, Seth B. Winner Sound Studios was formed, and as president of this company, Mr. Winner has done remastering work for such organizations and institutions as BMG, Sony, BBC Legends, Pavilion Records, MCA GRP, Crystal Records, Teldec Universal, the New York Philharmonic, and Minnesota Orchestra. He has also done consulting work and preservation projects for such institutions as Rutgers University, UMKC-MARR Sound Archive, Harvard University, and the University of Wisconsin. Currently, he is finishing a nearly 13-year project of transferring and restoring the concerts and broadcasts of the original Bach Aria Group concerts from 1946 to 1980. He has also recently been working with the pianist Byron Janis in restoring some of his live recitals and will be undertaking a project for the International Piano Archives of Maryland concerning a restoration of Mozart piano concerti broadcasts performed by Nadia Reisenberg during the 1939-1940 radio season on WOR. 4 years ago, the Sadie Corporation, in conjunction with CEDAR of England, introduced a plugin known as Retouch. This plugin has revolutionized the remastering and restoration field and will be demonstrated in this presentation, or maybe not. And now, and Seth B. Winner.
Thank you. Thank you. Did I write all that?
Oh, jeez. I don't know. You mailed it to me.
Yeah. By the way, Richard, the back of those Scotch tapes say lifetime guarantee. Where do we send them back when we have to exchange them?
Well, I'll call Mark in Minneapolis and see if he can find someone.
Is there anything left of the building over there?
Dell Ellis and Bill.
Oh, Dell, yeah.
And Bill Lund are not answering my emails anymore because I'm asking a few questions they don't want to answer.
Well, there you go. I have to bring him to court about that. I had the retouch system loaded on the computer. It worked beautifully, and then we tried to do it now. Unfortunately, you won't see anything. We're going to hear a lot of before and after examples. Retouch came into existence about 3 to 4 years ago through Sadie in cooperation with Cedar. And this was essentially a program that is used to fix major problems like tape dropouts, bad clicks and pops, also a myriad of problems. And I want to start with something that came from Carrie Janelle and Mike Kiefer for their label. Apparently somebody had an only known alternate take of a Beiderbecke Trumbauer side that had a crack running from the center to the edge. And of course, you know, as Curly Howard used to say, I'm a victim of circumstance. This thing walks in, they call me up about a week after I get the program and said, can you fix this? I said, sure. Let me play you the example. You'll probably know when the click disappears.
Yeah.
That 3.5 minute piece took me about 4 days to clean up using three plugins from Cedar. One was first hitting each click with a manual declick, then hitting it with the de-thump because of the cantilever ringing as it was going through that crack, then using retouch to smooth it over and also get rid of some of the strip grooves that are in there, because apparently whoever had the disc loved it to death, as we used to say, and played it with a heavy pickup. And toward the inside of it, there was a big scratch, so I had a double problem to work with. It's out on Carrie's label, and it came out rather well. That was probably the hardest thing I ever worked on, and it was the first thing I worked on. Within a short period of time, Cedar sent a couple of upgrades that was like a godsend. The way this works is, it's essentially you take the area you want to remove, and it creates a pair of wings, and then you hit a button that says R. What happens is it interpolates from either side and removes the bad area. That's terrific if there's no signal on either side that you're trying to get out. If you have a problem of a signal a little bit too close to where the crack is, you then interpolate part of that music and you get all sorts of strange artifacts. Well, they came up with an upgrade where all of a sudden you can now, instead of using the wings, you can adjust it, but also do a cut and paste and slide over. In other words, take from a clean area in the same frequency area and just substitute. And what's even more remarkable is another one where you can change the frequency, meaning that if you had a certain frequency, and I'll demonstrate it with a hum that's going straight across, you mark it, knock off the frequency lock, and you do a cut and paste and take something from above or below, and it completely removes the hum without a problem, instead of sitting there trying to notch things out. Here's another example. This one isn't as bad, but this is another one I was fooling around with. Very famous Benny Goodman record, Bach Goes to Town by Alec Templeton from his Topsy Turvy suite. This was one that had a gas bubble at the beginning. Though it's not as bad as the Trumbauer you heard, it's a bit annoying. Now using retouch. That's relatively easy. Now we come up to some audio problems. I'd spoken to Steve Smolian about it. I said, Steve, how do you get out a low-end thump? He said, well, you take the area, you do a high pass on it, and you can pretty much remove it, especially if it's on a slow-moving disc. Well, here is something that from the classical end of thing, of course, a lot of these examples are going to be Toscanini recordings, since I am the expert, supposedly. This is the very famous last side of the Semiramide overture with the New York Philharmonic recorded in 1936. And what you'll hear is something where the engineer bumped into the cutting lathe, and you'll hear the noises. You can't really high pass that because of the fact that those pits is so far down below, they're right where the thump is. Well, using a little bit of cutting and pasting, we wind up with this. I don't know if you also noticed, I was talking about how I did that frequency lock thing. There was a whirl in the other one at about 250 hertz. I removed that too while I was working on it. Now here comes the usual problem of trying to join an old 78 RPM recording where the orchestra has to stop and they start up again, but they don't stop the same way as they start. And you're also dealing with a problem of diameter EQ problems, rumble, change of the surface noise because you're going from the inside of a disc, which is going at a slower linear speed, and starting on the outside of a disc, which has a higher linear speed, and if the pressing is just slightly warped, you're going to get a lot of low-end bumping distortion. This is part of the Barbara Seville overture with Toscanini in the New York Phil from 1929. This is an illustration where you'll hear it stop, the needle drop, and then the next side will continue on, so you'll hear the problems. I hear a little of applause over there. Thank you. What you actually heard was also another thing that retouch can do. I did a combination of cloning over the surface noise over the two sides to create a uniform background noise, which you can do either by winging it or doing a cut and paste and taking from either side. Generally, with the upper end frequency problems, you do a combination of interpolation where it takes from either side, combines, and then replaces. You'll also notice, too, in the before and afters, every one of these examples has been run through the Cedar-Cambridge system using phase correction, declicking, decrackling, NR5 noise reduction. Now it's getting a fingerprint of the noise, and then reshaping it with a certain amount of parametric EQ that's in there. It's leagues ahead of the old Cedar systems, especially the external boxes, in the sense that they do not cause any sort of artifacts that used to be very common when trombone blasts would come in, cymbal crashes. But a lot of little grots, a little bit of crackle still gets through, and that's what retouch is there for, to take out. And Cedar also has a decrackle plugin in the Sadie that I will run things through too, and that will take out another level of decrackle and sometimes a certain amount of tracing distortion that's in a recording. Now we come up with another Toscanini recording. This is a chewed up copy of the Midsummer Night's Dream Scherzo from the same period in 29. The strip groove is not uncommon to what you would hear in an electrical storm recording, in other words, transient noise from lightning affecting an AM signal. Let me play it to give you an example. Of course, there was also that large pop in there. You'll also notice, too, that because of the fact that it had been played with a heavy pickup. There's also a certain amount of circumferential scratching in there due to the fact of the stylus just grinding away into the shellac. Well, here it is restored, removing the transient, fixing the surface noise, and getting out that pop. So essentially, if you're trying to do a restoration and you don't have a prime copy, you can get away with things sometimes. Now I'm going to really get everyone's hair, the back of their hair, the heads up. Who knows the 1939 Eroica with Toscanini? What is it famous for in the opening, between the opening chords? Thank you. A cough. This is the way the broadcast sounded as BMG released it. Adrian Cosentini and I did the transfer. Ward Marston did the remastering on it. And this is what was on the Gold Seal edition in 1990 of the opening of the October 28, 39 performance. That was the way it was issued. As you can hear, there's clicks, crackle, there's a little couple little scratches, as well as that cough. This was off of a set of RCA Victrolac discs that was cut directly off the line, and in a certain way sounded better than the NBC reference discs of the period. What I first had to do here is I did a background pass of de-click and de-crackle to remove all that noise, because the problem is when you go into retouch, if you try to get the cough, the bottom end of some of those ticks are right over the cough. So if you move it over, you now have created artifacts that will not come out easily unless you want to manually retouch it. So the trick is always clean up the signal first and then do what you want to do for cosmetic purposes. Well, here we go. I'm altering history. Collectors are going to start screaming at me for that, but where you get the tape from? Yes, right. Actually, what I did on this too is that when the strings came in after you've decrackled it, it had a very glary sound. So going into the upper end frequencies, I removed part of it through retouch. Just absolutely took the area and just cut and pasted from a quieter passage. Taking out that cough took less time than actually doing the interpolation, waiting for the computer to do the cut and paste over. That was an easy one. However, I think on this one you'll agree that cleaning this up would have been necessary if we had this at the time. This is another one of the famous noisy Toscanini recordings. It's from a concert on April 14, 1950, the Italiano and Algeri Overture from a Carnegie Hall concert, not broadcast, recorded by Carnegie Hall Recording Company off lacquers. This is another one Adrian and I had to transfer in. It wasn't in very good shape. But that isn't the problem. Just listen to what goes on during the opening of this from the audience. It sounds like the audience is playing for the orchestra as opposed to the orchestra playing for the audience. Thank you. That's a mess. It's an absolute mess. The other problem was, as best as they could, they were running this also through Cedar Hiss 1 at the time to try to remove some of the scratching. And the very beginning of it is taken from another lacquer source and then edited in on the first note because the source was so noisy. Well, after about a half an hour of that 20 seconds we heard, here's the result. I think you'll agree it's a lot more pleasant. If I had my choice, I'd rather work with what I had just done and reissue it that way. Because every time you hear it, between the coughs, a door openings, a squeak, I mean, come on, folks. Actually, when they reissued this in their 20-bit series, the producer lopped off the opening pizzicatos because he felt it was too noisy. It started after the rest. All right, here's an interesting problem. This came from a set of lacquers from the VOA of a concert given in 1950 in Carnegie by Ormandy and the Philadelphia Orchestra. This is part of a Sibelius Seventh, and I think it's kind of self-explanatory in what had happened during the recording of this concert. Ouch. Oh, yeah. Those are the things that will drive us crazy, like a time signature tone, something like that, where you actually lose part of the signal. It lost ground for a second, and the whole signal disappears. Well, with a little diddling back and forth using retouch and hitting the area a couple of times, this is what I was able to come up with. Something we could have never thought of earlier at one time. Wait, I ain't done yet, folks. That's only one of the goodies. Thank you. I was talking about hums, very persistent hums. Gary Gale and I spoke about this. You know, the great Telefunken recordings from 1937 with Mengelberg and the Concertgebouw. Anyone remember his Pastorale? Whoops. Hey, what the... Sorry about that. Okay. Yes. There we go. There we go. I was wondering. Thank you. you can hear, it has a terrible 50-cycle hum in it with harmonics at 100 and 150. And I explained before how about going in, looking at the frequency, and swapping a frequency where it was clean? Well, here's the result. Some of you doubting Thomas is going to say, well, you must have taken some of the signal with that. You can't just remove a hum. It's not that easy to do, especially when it's that broadband and it has harmonics in it. Well, as us engineers know in the digital domain, by lining up the original file with the reprocessed file and inverting one channel, you can create a differential. In other words, whatever the difference is between the two signals will only be heard. If everything's the same, you won't hear anything. So what I just did is I took the one with the hum, the one without the hum, lined it up, and inverted it. I'm going to play that for you now. What you will hear is essentially the hum that's been removed, any of the ticks and pops that Decrackle got, as I also did through retouch, and if you hear any little artifacts, that's where I went in to fix either a strip groove or a little scratch in it. And that's the only differential. But I defy you if you can hear the music coming through. Did I take anything out? Except a whole bunch of ticks. That's where there was a strip groove and I worked on the bottom to get rid of some pumping distortion. And those are where I had fixed little scratches. Doesn't this Pastorelle version sound wonderful? Pardon me, Dennis?
Sounds of Nature.
Yes, that's right.
Seth, it's really a piece by John Cage.
435 with a hum in it, huh? Okay, now what have I got next? Oh, yeah. If any of you were at Dennis's necrology program this morning, we played an excerpt of a song by Benatsky, and it was from a very early German electrola disc which suffers from chatter. 1930. Chatter is essentially the result of the wax cooling down as it's being cut, causing a whistle at the end because the linear speed is dropping. And I remember what A.C. Griffith said about it. He said, well, it's the two frequencies and it changes because the linear speed changes. If we had retouch working, you could actually see it. It looks like, in the audio spectrum, like a zigzag going down further and further. It could start up as high. If you're doing a 2496, you can see it going as high as 35K, believe it or not, and just coming all the way down and coming into the audio spectrum. By using a cut and paste and removing it, it can be solved. Let me play you what it sounded like before I worked on it. It also had a little bit of pumping distortion in spots.
Und musst du dann einmal fort von hier, tut dir der Abschied so weh. Dein Herz, das hast du verloren. Im weißen Rössel am See.
There's the whistle. Now it cleaned up.
Und musst du dann einmal fort von hier, tut dir der Abschied so weh. Dein Herz, das hast du verloren. Im weißen Rössel am See.
Yeah. Okay. For the last example I'm going to play of an excerpt, last year BMG put out, reissued, supposedly, well, not supposedly, they did, new transfers of the legendary unpublished Tuscany Philadelphia recordings. If you get your journal, my associate, Mr. Galo, has done an extensive review of it. And there are a lot of sonic problems in it. And I'm going to play you something. This is from The Death and Transfiguration, which was probably the least successful transfer in the set. This is what's on the CD, and this is how it was issued. Let's see. What you're hearing there is an oxidized metal part, a negative, that they had problems transferring. It wasn't tracking. Properly and created a lot of thumps. In their effort of trying to remove the thumps, they created dropouts. They didn't get out the low-end noises. The side join is not right. It stops and starts, and there's an incredible difference in surface noise from the end of one side into the new side. And the new side also had some metal part deformation. You hear some low-end thumping as it's going along. I said, oh, good, this will be a great demo. It shouldn't take me too long. 2 hours later, this is what I came up with.
Thank you.
Thank you. I got 2 minutes. I want to play something.
Yeah, you got six.
Six. Oh, great. Wonderful. The CD players, something else. I like the side so much. Let me play you the whole thing. Bach Goes to Town with Benny Goodman.
All right, I think we're going to squeeze in 5 minutes of questions if folks want to...
What, I've left you speechless again?
Touch can't take out the eccentricity on the outgoing side of Sony BMG's masterly transfer job on Toten Verklärung. That's one thing we really wish we could do, huh?
Yeah, well, what can I tell you, Dennis?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you're a little bit disappointed at the absolute paucity of Toscanini reissues given this anniversary year.
Thank you. Could you give Gary the so we can answer that?
I said not if they're going to be done like that.
This is true. And also the fact, too, that essentially the company is pretty much not existent anymore, and the fact that we've lost Tower Records within the last, 4 months. Legacy, it's going to pretty much stay out of print like it did at one time, in the LP era for a while. Remember, as each year goes by, these are mono recordings. The new generations don't want to hear even this degree of surface noise on things. They want everything to be squeaky clean digital and stereo. Squeaky clean MP3, oh yeah, well, that too. Who's got the mic?
I do. Seth, in some ways, I kind of wish you'd play the Trumbauer side instead of the Goodman side.
I could have if the editor was working.
Oh, okay.
Unfortunately,
because
yeah.
I think one of the reasons why that thing was probably played so much is because it's a superior performance for Beiderbecke.
Yeah.
The commercially issued performance, that's futuristic rhythm, by the way, is not as good for Beiderbecke solo. So whatever reason why it was rejected, it wasn't rejected because of Beiderbecke. It was rejected for some other reason. But the Beiderbecke solo on that is head and shoulders above the thing that was issued commercially. So if you haven't heard it, all you Beiderbecke fans, try to hear that. It's amazing big solo. It really is.
Yeah, what's the label that's on, Vinny?
It's on Carrie Janelle's thing now. He's got that Bix Restored.
Library. Yeah, Origin Jazz Library, that's right.
He's got copies with
him. Yeah. Any other questions? Any answers? What? Yes, Gary.
I have an editorial comment on the Philadelphia recordings. A really sad thing with those recordings. Toscanini made 55 78 RPM sides with the Philadelphia Orchestra in late 41 and early 42, and all were rejected because of technical problems.
Yeah.
The real tragedy is that with a qualified engineer and producer doing that reissue, all of the technical problems that prevented those recordings from being released in the first place can be rendered moot, and it's a tragedy that a Sony BMG were not willing to spend the money to do it right.
What can I tell you? And your review is the only one that's going to tell the truth. They put it in the New York Times. Glorious sound on the website. People say, oh, it's the best sound I ever heard to it. I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Right, one last one.
Seth, I was wondering if you could give us an idea of what the interface looks like. The only thing that I've seen that's similar to what you're showing is the algorithmics software. I was wondering if it's similar to that or... Just in general, like graphic interfaces.
It's not graphic. It will give you an image, and certain things will just show up specifically. If it's a tick or a pop, you'll see a straight line like a transient. If it's a bump, you'll see like a mass at the bottom. Any sort of like whistle or hum will be a straight bar going across the musical image, which will have be according to whatever music is there. You know, it's shaped. Unfortunately, if I had it working, I would have shown you. I could have given you a live demo, but. Hey, them's the breaks. It's very hard to explain. But there is some of it online. If you do go, I think, to Cedar or to Sadie, you can at least see a snapshot of what I'm talking about. Is that on?
Hello.
Yeah, we are.
It looks like a giant bank lobby painting in yellows and greens and some blue. And, you know, you can modify the brightness and the contrast in order to pull up certain things in the image. And that's how you go after some of these
And the darker
events.
The intensity, the harder the frequency, you know, it's more of a frequency is being shown. That's how sometimes if you have a recording where you've got, you know, an edginess into it, you can look up... pull it up, and it's a great real-time... signal analyzer, but it's static. You just look at it, you see where it's most intense, you say, oh, 2,500 hertz, all right, put a parametric in, drop it 4 dB, and it cleans up the problem. One more question, and then I gotta relinquish the floor.
I have a much more naive question because I'm not involved like the rest of you guys all are, but I'm interested in the outcome.
The what?
In the outcome. For instance, the Mengelberg recording, which has a steady multi-frequency hum in it.
Yeah.
How is that conceptually removed without removing the frequencies that are involved?
Well, what happens is you're swapping. You're doing a cut and paste.
Well, but what do you... What do you find that's without the hum if the entire...
An adjacent frequency right above or below it, and you just substitute. In other words, it clones it.
And you pitch shift it as it's cloned.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. In other words, it's the equivalent of like when they restore a movie and there's a white spot due to an emulsion problem, and let's say they can't take something right across it, they'll take from above it and drop it in. That's exactly what this does.
Okay.
Except you're working with frequencies and it's on a scale
visually.
So
the frequency shift occurs as part of the software.
Yeah. You have an option of either moving the frequency up and down or staying at the same frequency. But you have the ability to unlock it.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's have a hand for Seth Winner. And I have to say, I love being at an event where a room full of people applaud the removal of a pop or a click. It's just, you know, or a hum. Really, it's, you know,